Steve's gonna have to design our website. Ann Twain, Maurice Jones against the Commonwealth, Mr. Miller, Ms. Bumgarner. Hi, Mr. Miller. Glad to hear from you. You have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. May I please reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal? Mm-hmm. May it please the court, my name is Bill Miller from the Arlington Public Defender's Office, representing Mr. Jones. Your Honors, this is a case where Mr. Jones was found guilty of felony looting. The issue is very clear, as we stated out in our assignments of error. He complied with
the law. Let me interrupt you, because I think this is just a fairly simple issue of statutory construction.
That's correct.
And we have a statute with two subsections to it. And would it be fair to, would you agree that each subsection constitutes a different crime or a separate crime? Similar but separate. One's a misdemeanor, one's a felony.
They are different crimes. They're all within the statute of looting. One is a felony, one is a misdemeanor.
Well, the subsection in question here, which is B, 817B, has three elements the Commonwealth has to prove. First, that a person received a visible or audible signal to bring his vehicle to a stop. I don't think anybody here seriously questions that that wasn't done. Second, the person must drive their vehicle in a willful and wanton disregard of that signal. And third, by driving in such disregard, the person must interfere with or endanger the operation of a vehicle or endanger a person. I don't think anybody seriously contests that one either. So we're really talking about the middle one there.
Your Honor,
would you agree with me so far?
No, I do not, actually. Okay. I think that the answer is that he complied with the stop. That's the point of our sign of error, is that one has to, unless I misunderstand.
Well, the second element is the person must drive the vehicle in willful and wanton disregard of that signal.
And
it seems to me that's the issue, or am I wrong? It's really the only issue.
Well, the issue is that he brought his vehicle to a stop, therefore comply with law, and therefore.
Well, we all understand that factually he brought his vehicle to a stop, but I'm just asking if that's the element that we're arguing about.
The element is that he did not disregard. And I'm sorry if I'm misunderstanding Your Honor's question, but he did not disregard. Yes, so he did not disregard the signal because he brought his vehicle to a stop.
So if you stop. Even briefly, and then you take off, that can never be felony eluding.
No, Your Honor. The thing is, I think what we have to look at is part of the analysis is whether there was a seizure. And I would suggest, Your Honor, that he was seized. And because he was seized, at that point in time.
Probably not very well if he's driving with two police officers hanging out of his vehicle.
I understand that, Your Honor. But the point is that we have to look at this in context with both A and B. Subsection A makes it misdemeanor.
And I think that's what troubles me, is you want us to kind of conflate A and B, and I'm not sure. I mean, it seems to me they each have discrete elements, and if the Commonwealth can prove all the elements of A, you're guilty of A, and we don't care about B. If the Commonwealth can prove all the elements of B, you're guilty of B, and we don't care about A. You want us to look at A in conjunction with B, and I'm just not sure that's the proper statutory construction approach.
I believe it is, Your Honor. I think that the court is, under the canons of statutory construction, has to look at both A and B in context, and that's Halifax versus Wachovia Bank.
But only if we need to construe them. You know, if we can't construe one independently, then we would certainly look at the other. But if we could construe one without needing to look at the other, I'm wondering why we need to look at the other.
Well, Your Honor, if they're both under the same code section, if one says and has the elements or the secondary element of attempting to escape or elude, then, Your Honor, I think that suggests an action. I'm sorry.
Would you agree that the intent of the statute, A and B, is to require people to stop upon command of a police officer so that they can either investigate what needs to be investigated or provide a traffic summons if that needs to be done?
I would concede that the intent of the statute is for somebody to stop, and I'm suggesting that Mr. Jones stop.
I mean, the absurdity would be if a police officer flashed his blue lights and I ignored them, but I stopped at every stop sign and I stopped at every traffic light, but I just never stopped for the police officer. You know, I'm not guilty of anything under your theory, it would seem to me.
Well, absolutely. That's not the case, because what happens is you have to comply with the initial command of the police officer. And then, if that is done, and then you take off subsequent to that, you could be found guilty, Your Honor, yes, of subsection A. But you could not be found guilty of subsection C.
But the facts in this case were that while he stopped, however briefly, or at least long enough for the police officer to get out of their car and walk up to his car,
correct.
Their lights were still flashing blue, as I understand this record.
That's correct.
Which would suggest to me that you should continue to remain stopped until the police can do what they are there to do, you know, which is to investigate whatever needs to be investigated. Otherwise, the intent of the statute would be clearly frustrated, wouldn't it?
One is, no, I don't agree with the first part, that there are many times that police officers have their lights on and we do not have to stop. For example, if there's a police vehicle at a construction site, people do not have to stop. If there's a police car that comes behind you, we can pull over to make way for them, but we do not necessarily have to stop. With regards to the frustration of the statute, Your Honor, I believe, if I can anticipate Your Honor's thought processes, does this make this statute absurd? And the answer is no. And the reason why it is not absurd is because there are other statutes which criminalize this sort of behavior. Whether it would be, for example, the hit and run statute, which leads to either a misdemeanor or a class 5 felony, reckless driving, also within the confines of A of 46.2817.
But to focus back on this statute, your interpretation would say that if the officers tell them to stop, and he stops, and the officers go to the car, and they're dealing with him, and they're actually getting in the car to try to get him out or to get the keys away, if he takes off with them hanging out of the car, as happened here, then it can only be a misdemeanor instead of a felony.
That's correct, Your Honor. That has to be my argument.
Well, even if that is your argument, when they reach for the keys, and they're literally hanging out of the car as he takes off, and one falls, the officer on the right falls actually on his face on the pavement. Why isn't that an additional instruction from the officers when they're reaching for the keys to pull him out of the car that he needs to stop?
I would not believe, Your Honor, that that counts as what's required in the statute of a visible or audible sign.
It's visible.
What about
reaching
the
keys?
Or stop.
What about the officer's verbal statement? It was something to the effect of, oh, no, you don't, or whatever.
I disagree with the Attorney General's characterization of that, and I'm referring to the joint appendix on page 80. It says, I'll just read this very briefly. I saw the driver turn and look at him, and I heard him say, quote unquote, what? Then he said, quote unquote, just go. And I said, my initial reaction was, no, you don't. There are no quotes around that, and that's not a technical point.
So in other words, that's the officer's thought process.
That's the officer's thought process.
Rather than verbalization and command.
And I would suggest, Your Honor, that we are limited to what the transcript says. Now, whether they're, and I think it is significant, and that is the transcript that's before the court.
But the transcript clearly indicates they were reaching for the keys to pull him out of the ignition, or to get him out of his hand and then to get him out of the ignition, right?
That's undisputed, yes, they were. But I would.
So why isn't that a visible signal? What could be more visible than that?
Your Honor, maybe he wants the keys. I'm not trying to be flip, but you know, I think that the issue here, and this gets at my very issue, is that it's subject to interpretation. So, Your Honors, as my brief points out, if Your Honors find that reading A and B together, that it is subject to interpretation, then we have to fall to the rule of lenity. And under Berry versus City of Chesapeake, penal statutes are strictly construed against the Commonwealth. And Your Honors...
But we typically don't construe them in an absurd to achieve an absurd result.
And my point is that it is not an absurd result because there are other statutes which criminalize this behavior, as I've mentioned before. And I would like to make a couple of important points, is that when we look at statutory construction, I mean, again, I pointed out Halifax versus Wachovia Bank, but there are other issues here as well, is that under Section C, you know, the question comes to mind is why didn't they just incorporate it by reference? Clearly, the legislature knows how to incorporate by reference because they do so in C, where they reference B, and then they make any violation of B where the individual is killed, let's say in a high-speed crash, where the police officer is killed in a high-speed crash, is a Class 4 felony.
Well, perhaps, let me ask you this. Perhaps their interpretation was that in B, by making it a felony, they talk about the requirement that it endanger the operation of a law enforcement vehicle, which wasn't the case here, apparently, or endanger a person. And that's something that, A, the misdemeanor doesn't necessarily have. So if you've raised it to the, where you're endangering a person or a law enforcement vehicle, why isn't that, why do you need to incorporate A? Because you've upped the requirement. It's more serious, if you will.
And on this, Your Honor, I would suggest that if the legislature had included the language or attempts to escape or elude, then that would be clear. But it is not.
Why couldn't the legislature have thought there that what we're talking about is they're simply fleeing on foot or even in the vehicle where no one is endangered? They just took off. But here you're endangering someone's life or health.
Well, at that point in time, Your Honor, I would suggest that I don't know. And therefore, therefore it's ambiguous. And if it is ambiguous, then it has to be viewed as interpreted, if you will, Your Honor, in favor of the defendant. I mean, there is a glaring disparity between A and B. There is language in A that is absent in B. And it has to do with the very action, I would suggest, Your Honor, that Mr. Jones took. He attempted to elude or escape after he was seized. After he was seized, he came to a stop, and after he was seized, he attempted to elude or escape. That falls completely within A. There is none of that language within B. And
I think analytically, if we adopt your argument, it seems to be one of two situations could develop that would not be criminal under your analysis, as I understand it. One would be a police officer pulls behind me, flashes his blue lights, I pull to the side of the road, he pulls in behind me. I come to a complete stop, and then I back up and I smash into his car, hoping to disable it, and take off. Under your analysis, because I have come to a complete stop, I'm good to go. Conversely, police officer comes behind me, I'm traveling down the highway, he puts his blue lights on, hits the siren. I don't pull over immediately. I keep on going. I try to get away. But at some point, I run out of gas or I give up and I do come to a complete stop. Now I've come to a stop, so I'm not guilty. And assuming that I endangered the officer or endangered the equipment somewhere along the way through the way I was driving that vehicle, I'm still not guilty of anything because eventually I had to stop sooner or later. Again, isn't that a kind of an absurdity?
Well, Your Honor, I think we have to look at the nature of the stop. And in the case that we have before you with Jones, in that case, I would suggest the important issue is that the keys were out of the ignition. So police officers approached, keys were out of the ignition. The car was no longer in operation. And at that point in time, he was seized. He had stopped. He had complied with the requirement to stop. He had turned off the motor of the vehicle. Then he started again. I'm not trying to be flip, but that's what happened. And therefore, it falls completely within Section A that he sought to elude and escape. He sought to escape, but not within B, because that language is absent. And because it's absent, we have to give it meaning. We cannot ignore, and I think as I lay out in my briefs, under the rules of statutory construction, if there is language in one portion of the statute, we must give that portion meaning in context with the other portions of the statute. And the fact that this is in the same, this is in the very same code section, which is the eluding code section, I think is very telling in that the fact that they have the escape or eluding section within A, it is absent from B. Clearly the legislature knows how to do that.
You've got about a minute left in the rebuttal.
Your Honor, thank you very much, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve the 5 minutes for my rebuttal.
You don't have that much left, but I'll give you another minute. How about that?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Susan Baumgartner for the Commonwealth. May it please the Court. There is no ambiguity in this statute. The statute does not criminalize failing to stop. The statute criminalizes driving in disregard of a signal to stop. That's the distinction here. And this, the statute, if the legislature had wanted to say failing to stop is the crime, they would have used the term failing to stop. They used the term driving in disregard of a signal to stop. And here we have the initial signals to stop. We have the lights, we have the sirens, and we have the police officers approaching the car. The seizure here in this case was never completed. I don't think that's dispositive in this case. But the very first thing the officers did was say, let's see your license and registration. And Mr. Jones never complied with even that most basic tenet.
Well, clearly they never exercised any appreciable dominion and control over either the vehicle or its occupants. There's no question about that.
They were trying to gain control. They told him to turn off the ignition. They told him to take the keys off. And then they told him to give them the keys because he was never in compliance. And he didn't. Instead, he put the keys in the ignition.
I guess he took the keys out of the ignition, right?
He did take the keys out of the ignition.
Was there any point here in his doing that he... he submitted, so my question is, mm-hmm. There's no seizure, of course, unless you submit seizure, but by doing even that, was he seized by taking the keys out of the ignition, even though he never gave them to the officer?
I don't think so, Your Honor, and that's because there was enough evidence in the record to suggest that this was all a ruse. This was a plan between him and his passenger to get away from the police. Because when the police were saying, give us the keys, give us the keys, his passenger said, just go, man. And he said, now? That suggests that before they pulled over, they said, well, we can get away from them. We'll just wait till a good time. And there was evidence to suggest that this was never anything more than a Mr. Jones pretending that he was complying so that he could do what he did, which is drive away, ditch the car, and escape. Now, he had all those signals to stop going on at the time he drove away. He had the lights remaining flashing. And this is not a case where they're just remaining flashing because there's some sort of accident the police want him to avoid. The lights were activated to pull him over in this case, and they remained on the entire time that the police were interacting with him and when he drove away. Then there was the signal, the continuing signal to stop of give me the keys, which he didn't comply with. And both officers reaching into the car when he put the keys back in the ignition and driving away with police officers hanging from your windows is a visible signal to stop. There is no question that is a visible signal to stop. But then we get to the other issue, which is arguably the statutory construction issue of, is this a stop or not? And that's where it gets down to whether he drove in disregard of those signals to stop.
Can we look at just the B section here for the purposes of deciding the felony, or do we need to look at A as well?
We can absolutely look at just the B section. And there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, because this court has said that A is a lesser included of B, which suggests that A does not have separate elements at all. And second of all, when you read the section that Mr. Jones complains of in A, the attempting to elude, I think when you read the entire phrase, it's attempting to escape or elude such law enforcement officer, whether on foot, in the vehicle, or by any other means. And that clearly is something separate from the driving to endanger. That's arguably if he had sped away and run from the car, I would suggest. That takes care of that sort of, as opposed to driving the car to endanger others is if you just get out of the car and flee from the car in an attempt to evade the stop. It's just absurd that because Mr. Jones was successful in getting away, that somehow the statute would not apply to him.
I'm not sure I understand the importance of a successful or not seizure. I mean, what does that have to do with maybe that has something to do with a Fourth Amendment issue if it was not a proper stop and suppression, but under 46.2817B, why are we getting into this seizure business?
I actually don't think the seizure is relevant, and that's not where I was going right now. There's a long...
No, but we've been talking about that, and, mm-hmm. and I, just reading the statute, didn't see why we had to go there.
I don't think you do, Your Honor. I think, as I say in my brief, this is at least an investigative stop. And in an investigative traffic stop, if you were given the signal to stop, I think it's... you must remain stopped until the police finish their investigation, whether or not...
Well, now I think we are mixing apples and oranges with constitutional Terry, you know, reasonable suspicion, all that stuff with the element. I mean, it seems to me Judge McCullough's point, which frankly I agree with, is why do we need to look any further than the elements specified in the statute given the assignment of error here? I mean, why do we need to get into anything even halfway resembling a constitutional issue?
My point for the success is that we have a whole string of cases that I cite in my brief in which someone initially complies with the stop and then takes off and is eventually convicted of felony eluding. And in a lot of those cases, they take off and then the police are able to catch up to them again. And they have the lights and sirens behind them and they don't stop. And in our case, the police didn't have the opportunity to catch up to Mr. Jones again after he disregarded their signal and took off from the initial stopping point because, one, they were being dragged, they had to recover from that, and two, he went down a side street and ran away from the car. So essentially, he would be rewarded in this case because the police weren't able to get behind him again in their police car and make an additional traditional signal to stop with the lights and sirens. In this case, he clearly drove in disregard of the signals to stop, both the initial ones and the ones that were going on at the very moment he drove away with the police hanging from his car. If there are no further questions, I urge you to affirm. Thank you.
You had a minute left. I'm going to give you another minute, so you got a minute and 50 seconds left.
Your Honor, I just wanted to address the issue as to why seizure is important. It's because Section A addresses specifically that question. It addresses somebody who is, Section A addresses attempts to escape or elude. I would suggest that escape means you're seized, and you're escaping from a seizure or elude. So this, again, action is fully within the confines of A. Secondly, it also addresses the vehicle, in the vehicle. So therefore, everything that occurred within that night falls within the confines of A. What it does not fall within is within B, because there's a mention of A, there's nothing which mentions B, and I would suggest to the court that we do have to read the statute, not the statute together, there's only one statute, but we do have to read and interpret B with A. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Sure. We're going to...